Hello and welcome to the Ultra Working Podcast. I'm Sebastian Marshall. Chris Natterer is joining me. We're going to talk about a lesson from history. Let's illustrate a common specific failure case. You never want to half schlieffen. You shouldn't necessarily schlieffen at all. Metaphorically speaking, you don't necessarily need to schlieffen in life. But if you're going to schlieffen, you better full schlieffen, not half schlieffen. Half schlieffen is a really, really bad idea. Chris Natterer, half schlieffen?
No, you shouldn't do it. Never do it. If you're schlieffening at all, do it 100% or do it not at all.
All right. So that's the thrust of the show today. People that are interested in world history and World War I will probably recognize the term. Before I turn over to Chris to talk about what the Schlieffen plan was, just like very briefly at a high level, my personal opinion, I'm not speaking for anybody else, not speaking for Chris, not speaking for Ultra Working, but just my personal opinion was there was like no good guys in World War I. There was like varying shades of bad guys. Like everyone's a bad guy in World War I. It's a very ambiguous war. We're not endorsing one side or another. We're learning from history, right? So we're analyzing the German side. The Germans obviously lost World War I. And the plan that might have led them to win World War I was the plan that they had that they did not execute correctly. So we're going to talk about that. And we're going to be like the Germans could have won maybe if they'd done things correctly. And I don't know if the world would have been a better or worse place if they'd won or fought to a standstill, status quo antebellum, who knows? Don't know. That's not what we're talking about. We're learning from history a little bit. The Schlieffen plan could have worked, Chris, but they didn't schlieffen. They half schlieffened. And yeah. It didn't work, and didn't work really badly. What was the Schlieffen plan?
If you look at Germany on a map, you will see that it is, at the time, was surrounded by many enemies on the west and the east. And basically, Germany assumed that it would be, in the next war, fighting a two-front war against France in the west and Russia in the east. And basically, the war planners came to the conclusion that it was really, really difficult, if not impossible, to win such a war fighting on two fronts against two, you know, powerful enemies. And so they had to come up with a solution for this conundrum. And the Schlieffen plan was one of the proposed solutions to allow Germany to win a battle against two enemies at once. And basically, the way it worked is that they actually wouldn't fight two enemies at once, but rather would commit all of their forces to fight France in the west first, with the idea of delivering a knockout blow in a very short period of time, basically taking France out of the war, and only at that moment in time taking some of the troops and deploying them in the east to defend against Russia. That was the Schlieffen plan, the rough outline of it.
Right. So Schlieffen was a German general. And, Chris is saying like, enemies in the west, enemies in the east. That was really how it was back then, up until relatively recently with the European Union, where Germany and France now cooperate a lot. Germany and France have been antagonizing each other since Charlemagne split up the kingdom between the sun in the west and the sun in the east, or their kids rather. Like just Germany and France just been jacking each other for a very long time. And they had, really embarrassed and humiliated each other back and forth. Obviously Napoleon leading France, jacked Germany really hard. The Germans didn't like that. During the German unification, the Germans jacked the French back. World War I starts rolling around and it's like, who is jacking and who is being jacked? And then Russia's Russia, take whatever your impression is of Russia and how Europe relates to Russia. It's pretty similar, from decade to decade. Russia's been Russia for quite a long time. And probably the contemporary impression of Russia is very similar to the impression that the Germans had of Russia back in that day, which is like a very big, very populous country that might mess you up a little bit. You might be a little more technologically advanced with them, but they have a lot of guys and they're a little bit, go a little bit crazy from time to time, So Schlieffen plan, you're not going to win fighting France, which is really technologically developed and really good, and Russia, who has a heck of a lot of people and land and materials at the same time, will knock out France first, then we'll fight Russia one-on-one. That was the plan, huh?
That was the plan. Yeah, that was the plan, and was, you know, developed in the beginning of the 20th century, and seemed at least on paper to be a workable strategy that that, you know, might have well worked. It turns out, like, history shows that for many reasons it didn't, and things came different.
Yeah, so what's interesting is they didn't do, and by the way, the like could have worked thing, a lot of people are like, oh, could the Schlieffen plan have worked? Well, I mean, they basically reran it in World War II, just fighting France, right? You know, and this is a different German government, different technology levels. Very importantly, tanks and radio had been invented, which were huge. Then aircraft were much more developed, and it was a very different everything. But like actually like going through Belgium and all that sort of stuff was like the same thing. I think the Germans in World War II, by the way, like were the bad guys. I think the Germans in World War I weren't. I think everyone's the bad guys in World War I, my personal opinion. But, you know, a different German administration with slightly different technology ran very Schlieffen-like and succeeded not that long later. And if anything, the French army was even better, or seemed like it should be on paper better at the start of World War II than they were in World War I. So, yeah, seems like conceptually could have worked. Something a lot similar to it did work for a different tech level and different, very different administration politically and culturally, yeah. Sometime later. But they never ran the Schlieffen plan in World War I. What did they do?
Right. Yeah, so the Schlieffen plan was a pretty substantial bet. It had basically some trade-offs in there. One of the trade-offs was that you would basically not defend against Russia in the east at all until you had defeated the French. And that would mean that if Russia, for whatever reason, you know, entered the war early, then they could basically really wreak havoc in the east and you know, destroy some of the, at the time, original German grounds. And you would basically have no troops to fend against them. So it was a pretty, you know, pretty, came at a price to run this plan. And, for whatever reason, I mean, politics and very often influence decisions on the battlefield. For political reasons, that is at least the way it seems from history, the plan was sort of modified to only commit roughly 80% of the troops to this Western attack and retaining about 20% of the troops to defend the rest of Germany in the east. And this may have well been the critical 20% missing to actually make the Schlieffen plan work and successfully deliver this knockout blow in the West.
Yeah, I firmly think so, because the Germans really kicked the hell out of the French in the opening of World War One. They really like were beating the French up pretty good. And I say this as like a historian that's neutral without a rooting interest. I just feel like I need to caveat this every 5 minutes. I can talk about the Napoleonic Wars. I can talk about the German Wars of Unification, like whatever, right? It's history. But the Germans were winning. And they were like, it was kind of like win, 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 neutral, win, 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 German, right? Like the French were just like losing. Like when they like fought to a draw, they were like very happy with the one or two times that happened. Those were like moral victories for them because they were losing everywhere. And then a battle happened called the Miracle of the Marne, right?
Yep.
The first battle of the Marne that was called the Miracle of the Marne, where the French, 10 miles from Paris, 10 freaking miles from Paris, the French were just like, all right, boys, give it everything you got or there's not France anymore, you know? And the French dug in and fought as hard as they could, and they innovated a little bit, and they gave it everything they got. And the Germans ran out of gas 10 miles from Paris. And then, you know, trench warfare started. And then, by the way, you know, it's not remarked on enough, by the way, from a humanitarian perspective, that all the super nasty stuff in World War One, by the way, you know, trench warfare, mustard gas, Passchendaele, people drowning in mud, all that garbage, probably doesn't happen if the Germans knock the French out in a freaking
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it probably doesn't happen. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe the next war would have been super nasty, even nastier, because we didn't learn those lessons. I don't know. But, so the Germans lost, and I think a 20% bigger German military like gets the last 10 miles. I think it's kind of pretty close to indisputable. Like, I don't know, unless they like ran out of food or something because they had more guys there. Like, I don't know. It seems like a near certainty to me. When I look at the map and I look at how close they were, and it wasn't like the French had this like amazing, you know, like we got a little Thermopylae thing that we're holding, you know, this little pass they can't get through. It's like Germans just ran out of gas 10 miles from Paris. By gas, I mean the soldiers were exhausted and casualties and stuff. 20% more guys, they take France down.
Yeah, also interesting that, you know, in this war, it was really capture Paris, end the war. I don't know if this would be happening in today where, you know, I don't know, the armies could just retreat to behind Paris and then keep the fight going from there and eventually retake the city. But in this scenario, it was really thought that, hey, once we take the capital, we are in basically the war is over, even though there is still plenty of France left to conquer technically.
Yeah, that's an interesting quirk of history, because you saw during the Napoleonic Wars, right? Like the really the custom was when you take a capital for the other side to surrender. That's why Napoleon got jacked so hard in Russia. People forget that he actually conquered Moscow. You know, he conquered Moscow, and the Russians are like, "We're not giving up. We're gonna like go like guerrilla warfare against you. We're gonna burn our own capital so you can't get all the supplies." I'm like, yeah, we want to buildings later, but we'll rebuild it. And then they just like harassed him on the way out of Russia. People forget Napoleon won on his way in. It was the retreat after they won and were victorious, but the Russians didn't surrender and make peace, was what jacked Napoleon. And then, and you know, the Germans had a lot of success during the German unification wars where they would like lightning strike. So interesting. People forget that Austria was very powerful at that time, much more powerful than the disunited German states. And, you know, Bismarck and Moltke, like during the war versus Austria and the German unification wars, like lightning strike. And I believe they captured Vienna in like 3 weeks. And then the, you know, the Viennese, Austrian Viennese, like surrendered and made peace. And, you know, they beat France in the final saga of the German unification wars when they captured Napoleon III, who I believe was the original Napoleon Bonaparte's like either nephew or grandnephew. So they captured him. So they captured the head of state and like, okay, then they unified the German Empire and nobody could stop him after that. Right. So there's this kind of like custom that really only the Russians in Moscow had violated. And they were always seen as a bit of a, you know, wild card that don't play by the standard European rules of civilization, have different communication structures and are a little more, you know, a little bit more capable of living on the land and living rough and suffering privation for better or worse, you know. So people always had the Russians flagged as a wild card, but typically if it was like you capture Vienna, Austria surrenders, you capture Paris, France surrenders, you know what I mean, and so on and so forth. So that was like the custom.
This might have also slightly changed in terms of customs after World War One, where, you know, we just seems World War One was where all of the, you know, previous sort of knightly customs of waging war were kind of dropped. They were there at the beginning, and they were really blown into smithereens or blown into little bits and pieces by the end of World War One, and didn't survive into World War Two at all.
Yeah, that's a great point. Probably partially the brutality of it. Partially, people forget a lot of the powers in World War One were monarchies, right? So as a monarch, if you like refuse to surrender, and your whole capital gets burned to the ground, you're kind of like a lose-lose because your people are going to be like super unhappy with you if and when you ever do retake power. Again, the Russians being a strange exception. Russians are like very tough and also like very like can be a little bit, I don't know, fanatic maybe. Maybe is the way to put it. So, you know, with a monarch, you know, if you can make peace on reasonable terms and you give up some gold and, you know, agree to a treaty that's not too bad, maybe you keep your crown. Maybe you don't get overthrown. You know what I mean? Whereas continuing the fight is like you're then getting potentially executed if you get caught. And even if not, your capital is getting burned down. You're probably not going to have legitimacy if you come back. Whereas in a more democratic state, whether that's like actual genuine democracy or like kind of fig leaf democracy where there's not really like, you know, nominally the Soviet Union was a democracy with voting and stuff and whatever, but not really. But even then, you know, if you surrender, you're out, you know, like losing wars gets you out in democracy in a hurry. And just different levels of engagement, levels of troops. It's a long topic, but yeah, long story short, right? Germany, France on the west, Russia on the east. They start fighting both of them, they're going to lose. So they make a plan. This guy Schlieffen makes a plan considerably before World War I broke out. He said, hey, why don't we throw 100% of our forces against France, concentrate our forces. We're like a little better than the French, was their thinking. Right? We're a little better than the French. We could beat them one-on-one. Can't beat them and Russia at the same time. No freaking way. Russia's huge, right? We're like a little better than the French. And like, you know, like one-on-one, we can hold our own versus Russia. They have a lot more people, but we're more technologically advanced and so on and so forth, right? Let's throw 100% of France, get them out quick. Some past officers in our military have done similar things versus Vienna, versus France. Like, we could do it. Then we'll be ready to gear up and fight a long, slow defensive war versus Russia. But we got to let the Russians do whatever the heck they want for a while. They might burn our stuff and loot our stuff in the east before we can finish off France and move back. And they didn't go full Schlieffen. Schlieffen, I believe, passed away by that point. It wasn't Schlieffen running the Schlieffen plan. I think he'd passed away. And they didn't go full Schlieffen. They went 80% Schlieffen. And they lost 10 miles from Paris, which meant they had to fight all of the rest of World War One, which was nasty, which they then lost, which means they got the Versailles Treaty, which was nasty, which led to World War II, and so on and so forth. It's really maybe not – it's very, very possible branch of reasoning that reserving those troops to defend the east, which were – we'll talk about that in a second, but which were like where the wealthy people's like houses and stuff were, and their manors, like the connected people. Not necessarily the wealthy, but the nobility that were connected. Not letting their houses get burned there led to the rest of World War One, the Versailles Treaty, the interwar years – the Weimar government, the Nazi government losing World War II, like, and now Prussia's not even part of Germany anymore. You know what I mean? Or most of it. So kind of bizarre that taking that 20% of troops to try to protect, like, screwed up the next 30 years. I mean, you could argue like a long part of Germany. You know what I mean? Like a lot. Like, the implications were gigantic. So, I mean, let's talk about that. Like, what the heck, man? They like had a plan. It was like, I don't know. It's like not kind of plan I'd be comfortable with. You know what I mean? But then again, like, I don't think I'd be comfortable with any plan to fight France and Russia at the same time. And like, I don't think they have much of a choice in the matter. You know, a lot of people say that, like, you know, the Germans were the aggressors and stuff. Like, I don't know. I think World War One was probably happening at some point sooner or later. And it was just that particular spark, the Sarajevo, Franz Ferdinand thing. I think it was coming no matter what, and France and Russia were allies. Neither of them liked Germany very much. I don't see that changing. Hence, they had this plan way in advance, right? Schlieffen plan. Yeah, but they didn't go full Schlieffen. What's wrong? What's wrong with those people? Why'd they go half Schlieffen? 80% Schlieffen, it's even worse. Like, they almost threw enough at it, and not enough. Why did this happen?
I mean, that's a good question in terms of that probably involves some politics, specifically why that didn't happen. I mean, I don't know how bought in the leadership was to this plan, if they believed in it. It was, after all, it was designed by someone else. And I think there is certainly a case to be made that very often someone taking over. This is true, you know, sometimes for the CEO of a company, they want to put their own spin on things. They don't want to just take the plan that was developed by their predecessor and just run it without any modifications. They want to put their own flavor on it. And in this case, it was, I think, fairly, from what I understood, fairly new and I think inexperienced general. I'm not sure if he had a lot of prior experience leading large-scale military operations, at least at this scale. I mean, who would have had? Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, this is really not a situation that I would like to be in where I have to make such a significant gamble. It's a gamble because if it fails, then yeah, you don't have any troops left to defend the East. So it better work. It's like a zero or one situation. One, if you're successful, then you really pulled it off. You pulled off a great play that really got you out of a very tricky situation. But if you don't, then yeah, you're probably going to look at the situation. You're like, oh, I wish I had a had split up my troops and just gone, you know, like, I don't know, held the ground in, on both fronts. And there are some general, I think, takeaways or points that we can use to analyze similar situations when they happen to us. And I think you pointed out a few interesting effects out to me that apply here.
Yeah. So, and you know, we already mentioned in passing, but I think it's also worth flagging that, you know, the East was, so they call it the German unification. I, as an amateur historian who's totally uncredentialed, think it would not be completely inaccurate to describe it as the Prussian conquest of the other German states. Like, in the German unification might be like a coat of paint. Like, hey, we're all just getting together. Mm. It's like, yeah, like we're getting together and then the Prussians are in charge. Right. So, and this was the Prussian heartland. This was like the Prussian part of the German Empire that was like run by the Prussians, was going to get looted and burned and stuff. Right. And so people are like, we don't want her, you know, and like their families and friends and like, you know, like whatever the church someone was baptized in or whatever was there. And like, they don't want that church to get potentially ransacked, you know, which I suppose is understandable. Right. But, you know, another way to phrase that is they had a plan, like you just said, that had a threshold in it where if you cross that threshold and you captured Paris, let's just like presume for this discussion that there's no French insurgency. I don't think so with the customs of the time. I think it's over if they get Paris, but like, who knows, whatever, maybe not. But their thinking was that we capture Paris, France is out of the war, make a treaty, fairly honorable era. They're not going to like break a treaty 3 weeks after signing it, you know, right? That's not going to happen, right? We get France out of the war. If we capture Paris, they make a treaty. We'll give it to them on decent terms, just like, hey, leave us the hell alone. Stay out of the war. We're going to go fight Russia now. Give us some gold. We're out, you know, right? They wouldn't have gotten a great treaty out of it because they then needed to go fight the Russians, right? You know? If they knock France out, they're okay. And then they can fight us slow. They'll beat the Russians eventually, as they did. Even with the two-front war, they beat the Russians after the Brusilov offensive failed, right? But if we don't take Paris after expending a ton of resources trying, we're in trouble, right? So to get all the gains, to get Paris, they needed to sacrifice. They needed to be all in on getting Paris. And they didn't go all in. They went part in and took almost all the downside and got none of the gains. They shouldn't have done the freaking thing at all if they weren't going to go all in on it.
Right. Yeah, it's totally right. When you don't realize that the modifications, the whole purpose of the plan, like it's either 100% this plan or it's a completely different plan. It's not 90% or 80% of this plan. It's either 100% of this plan or you really start from scratch and come up with a completely different strategy that I don't know, involves a completely different strategy to win the war, to fight the war. That's very often true, like in some areas where, you know, I see this in, when, for example, like I see this in some advanced, like physical domains, like, you know, very specific diets that have a very specific goal. And it's either like people have a tendency to want to almost maybe mix two different strategies. They want to take a little bit of this strategy and a little bit of that strategy, but it actually doesn't work. You either execute one strategy like really, really to the T, or you might execute the other strategy to the T. A mixture of both will really not get you any results and introduce just a lot of confusion into what you're supposed to do and well, not leave you with the desired outcome.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of things in life where there's like a threshold effect, and this is often the case where you're going to get judged favorably or unfavorably at a moment in time. You know, like you're going to get a scholarship or not, you're going to get a fundraising grant or not, you're going to get a large B2B contract or not, you know, you're going to present on stage at this very large event and it's going to go well or not. You know, with things like that, where you're putting in a ton of resources and you're either going to get back a really, really, really good outcome or you're going to get back very, very, very little, you know, it's really critical that you get the good outcome if you're all in, you know, or if the plan puts you at least most of the way to all in no matter what. Otherwise, you shouldn't run the plan. I don't know what an alternative German World War I strategy, if they're actually going to fight, would be. Some sort of raiding and defense. I mean, they probably would have like scouted for the most defensive points and just invaded just enough to take and hold those, right? I would imagine. That's my guess. But yeah, you know, like when you're doing something that requires all in, you're either going to get the result or not. You should go all in and you should like make the sacrifice. You shouldn't go part of the way in and put in all the pain and blood and toil and not get the result.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. I really like this concept to really think maybe in some situations, hey, is this a, am I in a Schlieffen situation here? Am I in a Schlieffen situation and am I going half Schlieffen right now or, you know, 80% or whatever it is? I think that's an interesting question to ask when you counter such a scenario.
Yeah, intentionally going cash flow negative in business, like in a startup, that's a Schlieffen type situation. You know, you make a couple hires that puts you in the red on purpose. You know what I mean? You like look at your burn, you're like, okay, we need to hit this amount of revenue by this day. You know, right?
Yeah.
That's like a Schlieffen situation. So if you're in one of those, like you're signing up for like rapid, fast moving, not like take and hold ground slowly, right? Like you really shouldn't, you know, go cash flow negative and then be conservative in your actions and do little incremental actions that won't add up. I mean, that sounds really obvious, but, you know, presumably the Prussian War College or whatever had smart people in it, and yet they took this all or nothing thing and they threw 80% at it. We're saying half Schlieffen because it sounds cooler. It was like actually 80% Schlieffen. You know what I mean? It's even worse, really, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, these situations where this single variable, you know, true or false is critical. We got Paris, yes or no? Yes, we're probably okay. No, we're probably in trouble, right? Like freaking optimize everything to get Paris. Like who cares if, you know, your favorite, you know, concert hall. Yeah. In East Germany gets burned down, you know, like whatever, like that sucks. Sorry, but like it's the world war has broken out, you know, right? Like if your plan is all in to get Paris, like, be all in. So yeah, maybe a lot of people will never identify a Schlieffen situation. Maybe they'll never be in a Schlieffen situation in their life where they're going to stake it all on one variable hitting. But there's like lesser versions of this where you're going to do something for a week or 2 weeks or whatever, and you're going to get a result or not. And you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, like if you're doing some like battle of the bands thing, and if you get in like first place or second place or third place, you get to fly out to New Orleans or Nashville or something and do something really cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, it's a big amount of work that you're going to prep, like do the rest of the prep, like do everything. Do you know what I mean? Like if you're going to commit a lot to something and then like in like top three gets a result and like number four does not, well then like get the cool costumes that are a fit for your band and like do multiple rehearsals and make sure your amps and your instruments are in good shape. You know what I mean? You really don't want to lose because, you know, you didn't look right for the type of a rock band aesthetic you're in. Or your one of your instruments failed because you didn't just double check or have extra strings or whatever you needed to get set up. Yeah, I mean, like when something is binary that you either get a result or not, and it would take a serious commitment to get the result, then like make overwhelmingly all of the commitment and then some to get the result.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. I agree.
So cool. Starting to wrap up, we threw out a couple of metaphorical terms. Got a Schlieffen situation. just came up with that on this podcast. That's where you got something that you're going to get all of the result or none of the result, and it will take a substantial amount of effort to even try. And a half schlieffen is where you try without putting in substantial effort. Don't do that. You don't have to schlieffen. Maybe you don't want to schlieffen. It's probably safer to not schlieffen at all. If you're going to schlieffen, you better full schlieffen. Chris Natterer, thank you for exploring this together.
Thank you.
And everybody, you don't got to schlieffen, but if you're going to schlieffen, full schlieffen. Thank you. Be well.